The early 1990s were heady days for the United States. After nearly half a century of Cold War, the Soviet Union, Ronald Reagan's evil empire, was no more, leaving the US as the world's only superpower. The American commentator Francis Fukuyama summed up the mood extravagantly, claiming that humanity had reached the end of history.
What we may be witnessing is not just the end of the Cold War or the passing of a particular period of post-war history, but the end of history as such. The universalization of Western liberal democracy as the final form of human government.
In the 90s, it did seem that the world was going America's way. Yet, as we shall see, the end of the Cold War made Americans edgy, not content. And under the surface of an economic boom was building a new crisis of capitalism. The winner of the 1992 election was the Democrat, Bill Clinton, formerly governor of Arkansas. As a sign of the times, Clinton's campaign also featured his articulate lawyer wife, Hillary Rodham Clinton. Bill promised voters that by electing him, they would get two for the price of one. Not everyone found that prospect attractive, however. The Republican right-winger Pat Buchanan declared,
"The agenda Clinton and Clinton would impose on America, abortion on demand, homosexual rights, discrimination against religious schools, women in combat. That's change, all right. But it is not the kind of change America wants. There is a religious war going on in our country for the soul of America. It is a cultural war, as critical to the kind of nation we will one day be as was the Cold War itself."
Politics during the culture wars of the Clinton years became vicious, with the advantage ebbing and flowing from one side to the other. In his first couple of years, the president made a dramatic attempt to reform health care. Most Americans derive their health care from packages provided by employers, so unemployment could be literally fatal. The problem of reform would have tested any president, but Clinton made serious mistakes along the way. He put his wife in charge. That was intended to demonstrate his commitment to the issue, but she became a lightning rod for anti-feminists, with her ideas, role, even hairstyle becoming topics of vitriolic debate. What's more, she came up with an enormous set of proposals, more than 1,300 pages, so detailed that everyone in Congress could find something to object to. And there was massive opposition from vested interests, particularly the medical profession and the drug companies. Hillary Clinton also discerned a deeper point.
"We were on the front lines of an increasingly hostile ideological conflict between the centrist Democrats and a Republican Party that was swinging further and further to the right. At stake were American notions of government and democracy and the direction our country would take for years to come."
President Clinton's problems became more acute after the midterm congressional elections of 1994, when the Republicans regained the Senate and won control of the House for the first time for 40 years. Newt Gingrich, Republican leader of the House, pushed ahead with his agenda to cut taxes and social programs, even shutting down the federal government for 3 weeks in a face-off with Clinton over the budget. Personality and partisanship aside, the underlying issue here was the proper place of the federal government in American life, a debate that went back to the Founding Fathers. On Capitol Hill, the struggle, however nasty, remained within the political arena, but some Americans were ready to go much further.
"I thought it was an earthquake when it started.
You sure are.
It was just a kind of a shake, and then everything started going like this."
On April the 19th, 1995, a truck bomb exploded outside the main federal building in downtown Oklahoma City, killing 168 people,
You can see one of the walls was just completely blown away. A whole side of
the... If this is a terrorist act, and it appears that it is the worst in the history of the United States, right here in Oklahoma, in the middle of the country.
The perpetrator, eventually executed, was Timothy McVeigh, an alienated military veteran obsessed with guns, computer games, and above all with hatred for the federal government. President Clinton believed that this hatred was symptomatic of more than the madness of one man.
The atmosphere of hostility was intensified by right-wing radio talk show hosts whose venomous rhetoric pervaded the airwaves daily, and by websites urging people to rise up against the government and offering practical assistance, including easy-to-follow instructions on how to make bombs.
After the setback of 1994, the election of 1996 proved the year of the comeback kid, as Clinton dubbed himself. Repositioned on the middle ground of politics and boosted by a tide of economic recovery, he was voted back to the White House in 1996 with a thumping majority. But the Republicans retained control of Congress and continued their vendetta against Slick Willie. Bill Clinton's Achilles heel was his philandering sex life, which eventually almost destroyed his presidency. The Monica Lewinsky scandal surfaced in the press in January 1998. After days of media and internet gossip, Clinton went on the record with a denial.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky.
The controversy engulfed America for months. Eventually, Lewinsky, the young White House intern, was given immunity from prosecution, whereupon she handed Congress's independent counsel, Kenneth Starr, a semen-stained dress to support her allegations that, on at least 9 occasions in the White House, she had had sex with the president. Starr was now in full cry, delivering a 450-page report full of salacious detail to Congress. Republican leaders in the House gleefully seized their opportunity, proceeding to impeach the president before the Senate. The only other time that such a trial had occurred was the unsuccessful impeachment of Andrew Johnson in 1868. Yet Clinton still enjoyed high opinion poll ratings thanks to the economic boom, and many people found Starr's report over the top and near pornographic. In any case, it required a two-thirds majority of the 100-strong Senate to impeach a president, and the Republicans held only 55 seats. Senators eventually rejected the charges of perjury and of obstructing justice. The sordid scandal reflected badly on everyone. Clinton was exposed as a liar and an adulterer, Starr and the Republicans as partisan fanatics. But the Lewinsky affair was the salty froth of politics. Under the surface, more significant undercurrents were building up. American business had capitalized more quickly and fully than its rivals on new information technologies. A sign of confidence was the spectacular rise in share values. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was under 2,000 in 1987. It topped 10,000 for the first time ever in March 1999. That was a fivefold increase in 12 years. The stock market boom partly reflected the inflated prices of IT stocks, but also the spread of share ownership for the first time to ordinary Americans. Although the dot-com bubble finally burst in 2001, the speculative tendency did not abate, shifting instead into housing. The boom was also stimulated by continued loosening of financial regulation. This removed the rigid legal barriers between commercial and investment banks that had been erected in the Glass-Steagall Act of 1933 after the Wall Street crash and the onset of the Depression. Although the new bill was advocated initially by the Republicans, the eventual compromise enjoyed bipartisan support and was lauded by President Clinton. The old law, he said, was
no longer appropriate to the economy in which we live.
It worked pretty well for the industrial economy, which was highly organized, much more centralized, and much more nationalized than the one in which we operate today. Over the past 7 years, we've tried to modernize the economy, and today what we're doing is modernizing the financial services industry, tearing down these antiquated walls and granting banks significant new authority.
Deregulation flowed on, with banks allowed to take increasing risks in the size of the assets they held against soaring debts and trades. Under Alan Greenspan, chairman of the Federal Reserve for two decades, interest rates were kept low, fueling the no-questions-asked boom in credit. Here were the seeds of future crisis, but few saw them at the time. At the end of the 90s, most Americans were preoccupied by the forthcoming election, and that proved one of the most controversial in U.S. history. The Republican candidate was George W. Bush, son of the former president, but unlike his father, a born-again Christian who opposed abortion under almost all circumstances. His Democratic opponent was Al Gore, Clinton's vice president, who supported abortion and gun control and was a passionate environmentalist. So their clash seemed to embody America's culture wars. The decisive state was Florida, where, after a recount, Bush's majority over Gore was a bare 500 votes out of a total of 5.8 million. With evidence of dirty practice on both sides and the added interest that Bush's younger brother Jeb was governor of Florida, Democrats and Republicans took the issue to the courts and eventually to the very top. 5 weeks after Election Day, the U.S. Supreme Court voted by 5-4 to overturn the Florida Supreme Court's decision to require a statewide recount. Gore protested the verdict, but conceded political defeat. Among liberals, the court's decision provoked an outcry. Harvard Law professor Alan Dershowitz even asserted that Bush versus Gore
may be ranked as the single most corrupt decision in Supreme Court history, because it is the only one that I know of where the majority justices decided as they did because of the personal identity and political affiliation of the litigants. This was cheating and a violation of the judicial oath.
Corrupt or not, by this decision, the Supreme Court had effectively taken it upon itself to decide the presidential election. As one of the placards at Bush's inaugural put it, "The people have spoken." All five of them. The election of 2000 rounded off a decade in which America's democracy had been under the microscope more intensively even than in the era of Watergate. Religion, sex, politics, even the Supreme Court had all become subjects of belligerent debate. While promoting democratic values as a global panacea, the United States found democracy hard to operate at home. And, despite appearances, capitalism, victor in the Cold War struggle against communism, was riding for a fall.